702 on 92.7 and 106 FM.
Streaming on 702.co.za.
The 702 app.
And on DStv channel 856.
It's just gone 7 minutes past 6 o'clock. Welcome to the Friday edition then of The Money Show. And it's brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking, sponsor of this year's virtual Mining Indaba. When it comes to mining, Absa doesn't see borders, they see opportunities. That's Africanacity. Absa is a registered FSP. So, of course, it's another Friday, but we do have a whole lot still happening in the world. Just so weird. Things like hedge funds, all of those getting into the nitty-gritties of this market picture, right? What exactly happened? The likes of GameStop, a company that perhaps some would think should have even been bankrupt for so many years, has had revenue declining consistently, and yet that share price ballooned higher this week. What actually happens with what people are calling rogue traders and hedge funds and all the like? We'll get into a little bit of that. But also, abstinence, the Cape Spice, right? With the owner or the CEO, Keith Stevens, joining us today as we just unpack the non-alcoholic brand's rise to fame and just how they've continued to receive awards. And even today, recently, should I say, they've received so many great awards. And we'll unpack just how in a time when we're, of course, seeing the alcohol ban, brands like these are bound to do even better. The fate of high-end fashion during a global pandemic, that's of key scrutiny. As you've heard as well in Eyewitness News, Ster Kinnecore going under business rescue. The impact of the pandemic goes wider than we could even imagine. All that plus the brutal biz quiz happening a little bit later on in the show. Do stay tuned. You're on The Money Show.
702. Let's walk the talk.
Streaming countrywide on the 702 app.
All right, then. Now, let's talk about the fate of high-end fashion during a global pandemic. And, I mean, it's just so interesting. In a cult favorite movie in 2006 the fate of high-end fashion, the lead character was firmly put in her place when she questioned the importance of fashion, right? Her boss unpacks just how much money and value is then created by the industry and, of course, the big names that revolve around it. But does high-end fashion still have a place in 2021, considering where we are with this pandemic, how bad things considerably are financially, and how they may be for quite a while as well? Carl Hammerschmidt is the CEO of Runway Sale, joining us now on the line. Carl, thank you so much for the time. Appreciate it. Does this still hold true? Is you know, the high-end fashion industry still as relevant and still as important, especially during a global health pandemic?
Thanks, Aravila. I think it's relevant to each region. I think in South Africa in particular, the high-end fashion players are struggling. I think that, you know, you had Prada leaving last year, and while you might have a few exceptions like Louis Vuitton, I think in general, any retailer in South Africa that's not focusing on what their online or their value strategy is has got some big questions ahead of them. And I think the problem with some of the high-end guys is online luxury retail in South Africa just really hasn't taken off yet.
Yeah, and I suppose it's also because it remains high-end. I mean, you're still seeing the likes of China still managing to grow their growth, grow their sales when it comes to the high-end fashion brands, especially, you know, brands that we look at and think, wow, that's absolutely huge. And even just looking at some numbers, what is it, Kering, the French umbrella company which houses Gucci, Bottega Veneta, Pomeletto, Ulysses Nardin, as well as Balenciaga, reported a more than 15% drop in revenue just in their first quarter. It's not just about the pandemic, though, is it? I mean, generally, people might be looking somewhere else in terms of getting some of the high-end fashion, if you want to call it that. Is that the case?
I agree completely. I think it's more than just COVID, although I do think that does have quite a big contribution. I think if you're not going out as much, inevitably, some of those premiums that you're willing to pay, you might think twice about. You know, I mean, we've seen cosmetics, fragrances, as categories not performing as strongly as they once did, while other categories, athleisure, comfortable clothing, kind of work from home type of clothing, doing very well. So I agree. It's not just the pandemic. I think there is a kind of around the world, a bit of a maybe push to be more sustainable, be more value conscious. But the pandemic certainly isn't helping things for those retailers.
Let's talk about the financial implications then this will have on the global fashion industry. I mean, do you see a consistent decline, or will there perhaps be some sort of reignition once the pandemic is over?
So I think it's very difficult to generalize in its entirety. As I say, I mean, Louis Vuitton still has queues outside their V&A and fashion stores over the Christmas break, which, given the environment we're in, is mind-boggling.
Yeah.
But I think in general, there is a few key trends happening in the fashion industry. I think you've got sustainability. I think people are considering value. I think online are major focuses. And so the brands that can move and kind of gravitate towards those realities, I think will do well. But inevitably, I think a lot of brands and household names that we know will kind of struggle to see 10, 15 years.
Well, certainly going to be an interesting one. I'd love to see just how far this actually goes. The high-end fashion industry, certainly one to keep an eye on at some stage as well. Carl Hammerschmidt, the CEO of Runway Sale there, joining us as we get into the look at high-end fashion during a global health pandemic.
Walking this talk together.
Every hour.
Every day. This is 702.
Let's walk the talk.
So now in 2020, that was just last year, right? Amidst this entire pandemic, former Springbok wing Brian Habana launched an application, an app called MatchKit.co. Now, this was set to help athletes realize their digital footprints without actually infringing on the work of agents. Now, we've actually just seen this year that USA swimming team has actually joined up with MatchKit.co that was trying to reinvent the way that athletes of every top tier and discipline monetize their careers. So critical, especially in a pandemic, to find a way to create a way to monetize your career despite how things are going. Let's talk about this deal, the significance thereof, what it actually means, and how exactly it works. Mike Sharman is the co-founder at Retroviral, joining us on the line now. Mike, thank you so much for the time. Appreciate it. How big a deal is this? And I mean, you know, how much impact is it bound to have just on athletes' lives as well?
Hi, Rabila. Thanks for having me. I think it's a massive deal and we're incredibly excited by it. Like you mentioned in the build-up there, you know, so many athletes and bodies and stadia were impacted by the COVID-19 sporting lockdowns. And it was estimated to be about a $62 billion loss in terms of all the impact of various sports. And we still have it now. Like, are the Olympics going to take place? Is the British and Irish Lions series going to take place? There's a lot of, like, huge impact both on the sporting codes and then obviously the revenue drivers and the fan experiences thereof. So for us, we built MatchKit.co in lockdown to help athletes determine other ways to drive revenue streams. And the vote of confidence from USA Swimming is incredibly extreme. I mean, it's basically given us this opportunity to take our tech to the rest of the world. And I think, you know, that's been an upside of lockdown, is that there's been no borders. We've been able to talk to people on Zooms and Hangouts across the world. And as such, we've been able to do this deal directly with the chief commercial officer at USA Swimming. Incredibly exciting time.
How exactly does it work then? I mean, what exactly do you do, and what is it that MatchKit would essentially do? So, for example, if I was the athlete in question here, what exactly would MatchKit do for me?
So for all the listeners out there, a great example is actually to visit Brian's page, matchkit.co/Brian Habana. You enter that into your browser and you'll be able to see the actual platform in work. And what we've done is we've essentially created almost like a website builder for athletes. They can be up and running in less than 10 minutes. It connects to their Instagram account, so they look in their professional best, almost like a digital CV of sorts. It shows their top content on social media. It shows all their social media channels that they're on, everything from Instagram to TikTok, for example, shows their most engaged pieces of content, where their fans are from around the world, and also their daily growth and their gender demographics in the splits between their fans, as well as having a built-in charity foundation button, or even the ability to sell personalized, bespoke, branded merchandise. So just these different opportunities to raise money, to sell different elements while we're in lockdown and your sport may have been impacted. And we effectively want to level the playing field for athletes of all tiers, all disciplines, and all codes. And I think that's a great opportunity, something that didn't previously exist.
I think it absolutely is phenomenal. It really just tells the story of where we are when it comes to diversifying your abilities, you know, trying to create the best way to monetize your career. So how exactly do you perhaps go beyond the agents or those that represent you, of course, and trying to ensure that they, don't feel left out when you do engage in something like MatchKit?
Totally. I think, you know, we're very fortunate because we actually have one of the most quintessential examples of how to be a personal brand as an athlete in Brian Habana himself. And if you think about Brian, he basically was the ultimate professional on the field, and he was also a pro off the field. And during his time, social media was starting to explode. And even if he may not have been active on all channels, you know, he went and registered Brian Habana across Pinterest, across Twitter, across TikTok, so that if that was a platform of choice, Brian Habana would always be his go-to personal brand within that space. And that's essentially what we're trying to do, is not to take work away from the agents, but to enhance their opportunity to help them, help their athletes become more marketable. Because once you can build and establish a personal brand for yourself as an athlete, you become more valuable to brands and sponsors. And that's where people want to put rands and dollars behind you. Look at our sprinters coming up to the Olympics now. Wade, Akani, very important personal brands. And those are the kinds of characters that people want to put money behind because they're winners. And I think that's an exciting thing about our platform, is that we're teaching multiple thought leadership aspects, not just branding, but, you know, financial literacy and the smarts around building a personal brand. So something that we're excited now to have the stamp of approval from USA Swimming, because it really shows that South African tech can go across borders, it can go across the world, and it can be best of breed.
Sure. Such an interesting one. I'm really intrigued. Thank you so much for the time, though. Mike Sharman, the co-founder at Retroviral, joining us as we talk about MatchKit and this big USA Swimming deal, of course, as we head towards the Tokyo Olympic Games. And hopefully they do indeed come right. But if not, other ways to monetize your career is certainly what MatchKit.co is trying to do. Mike Sharman, the co-founder at Retroviral.
Because some journeys are better taken together.
Let's walk the talk. 702.
All right, then now we get into some other market news. Of course, a whole lot has certainly been happening of late. And very interestingly enough, just as you've heard perhaps at the top of the hour there, just with regards to Ster Kinekor now under business rescue, it's certainly a sad situation, I suppose. And they're not the only ones, right? There's so many that are certainly struggling at this point and just trying to find ways to survive. The acting CEO of Ster Kinekor, Motheo Matsau, did deliver a few comments with regards to this. Let's listen on some of those and perhaps get some thoughts.
The board of directors of Ster Kinekor have taken the decision to place Ster Kinekor into voluntary business rescue due to the financial distress endured as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic and the consequent lockdowns, restrictions and curfews. The board of Ster Kinekor is of the belief that the safe harbor that business rescue provides in terms of a legal moratorium on our debt will assist both the business rescue practitioner and our team to return Ster Kinekor to profitability once our situation normalizes. We would like to remind moviegoers that in spite of going into business rescue, our cinemas remain open and are still operating under strict COVID-19 protocols, which include temperature checks, hand sanitizing, masks, and a predetermined sitting pattern that observes social distancing.
Sure. Doesn't that just tell the story, right? How difficult things have been. I mean, how many people can actually say that during this lockdown, particularly over the last couple of months or so, have actually gone to the cinema because of COVID-19, how difficult it certainly has been. We're going to get into our market commentary now this time around, and our daily market commentary is brought to you by Telkom Business. They'll beat any fixed line voice and internet quote or invoice. Email beatmyquote@telkom.co.za. T's and C's apply.
The Money Show.
The Markets.
Nick Kunze is at Sanlam Private Wealth and joins us now to get a hint of this market picture. Nick, is there anything more significant and more important in this market picture outside of the fact that the JSE, of course, has a third day of losses and its first weekly loss in about, I don't know, a couple of weeks odd? But anything more important than GameStop, really?
Why do you have to ask me that? Connie walking to my local Checkers without someone asking me. No, I think it's a real proxy for where we are at the market. You know, so much liquidity sloshing around the system. There's a real pushback on, you know, Wall Street versus the sort of retail traders. And it certainly catches the sort of current, the tone of where we are to the market. No, so it's been my conversation probably for the last week, actually.
It gets very interesting in a time when I suppose the market is trying to find its own way. You have a stock that many would have thought is dead beat, but the market decides, or some other people decide, if you want to call them rogue investors or whatever we want to call them, decide that perhaps, no, it should go the other way. And here it goes the other way. And then they say, well, we just want to, for lack of a better term, stick it to the man. And it goes all the way higher. Do you think that sort of shows a kink in the armor of the markets, if I can call it that?
No, you know what I think it does? I think it basically goes back to, trace it back to 16th century, 17th century with tulip mania, when people were paying, you know, more for a tulip bulb than a house. You know, speculation, certainly speculation on Wall Street is as old as the hills, and I really don't think anything's changed. And what happened in the GameStop scenario is that someone's, you know, figured out how to sort of game the system a bit with over-shorted shares, and how they can sort of gang up on Reddit and these other sites. You know, money is freely available. There's 0% interest rates around the world. And I think you throw all this into the pot, and you figure out how to do it. And human nature, fear and greed, is a way to make easy money. You gravitate. I just think it's on steroids now. You know, it's all real time. It's on Twitter. It's not as if you were, you know, hanging out around the shipping yards 200 years ago and discussing shipping rates. You know, now it's all real time in front of us, all over news press. And quite frankly, it's actually it's been quite a good distraction over the last few days.
It certainly has been. All right. So if we look towards, and I mean, we've probably looked towards the whole year, but I mean, the tech counters have been sort of the big gainers, particularly over the last, let's say, year, if not even longer, of course, because the FANG stocks have done their bit. Maybe we should call them FANG T, because Tesla's is making its own runway, right? What sort of gains this year, though? I mean, is it just going to be the ones that have been hard done over the last year, or is there a little bit more with regards to things like banking stocks that may begin to pick up again?
Yeah, I mean, that is the question that most people are posing now, is that as the vaccines become more readily available, and, you know, as we're seeing a little bit of light at the tunnel, and, you know, I heard your intro, maybe we start going back to movies, and maybe we start getting out of, you know, back to offices. You know, what does that leave us with these stocks that benefited from staying at home? Look, I think the genie's out the bottle there. I don't think we're putting it back. I think the likes of Microsoft, the likes of Zoom, you know, I think executives and people who are used to flying from Joburg to Cape Town for 1 hour meeting, you know, those days are over. So I do think some of these fangs, and you mentioned Tesla as well, electric vehicles, you know, they're not going away. In fact, they're going to get better. But I think the question is now more likely, what about those forgotten shares? You know, what about those stocks, like retail stocks or shares that didn't benefit so much, travel shares, shipping companies, et cetera, that have been, you know, no movement of cargo. You know, do we look back at them? I think that's more the question, because the tech shares, I think they're here to stay, and they're probably going to get stronger as the economy grows.
Yeah, it's just how far stronger, I suppose, in many contexts, in some instances.
Exactly.
Just very quickly, I want to touch on the MTN story a little bit. I don't know if you'll allow, but it's very important for their business, of course, to get into this 5G spectrum auction, right? Them and Vodacom. And considering the own goals that MTN has scored of late, they might need this a little bit more than others. And if they don't get in on the early auctions of the spectrum deliverance for 5G, do you think it hurts their business a whole lot more? Do you lose a little bit more confidence in the MTN business? Or is perhaps the process ICASA has undertaken enough to say, well, things should be okay?
No, I think it hurts their business, quite frankly. I mean, that's my sort of straight answer. I think you have to be in 5G. I mean, 5G, you talk about the FANG shares. I mean, look at the 5G going forward is
the Internet of Things. I mean Tesla, their whole that won't exist in 20 years' time if there's no self-driving cars. That whole business is now running off 5G, the future of these higher spectrums. So as a cell phone operator, as a company, something like MTN, you've got to have 5G. If you don't have it, it's like a retailer not having an internet presence at the moment for online retail. You've got to have that 5G. So my blunt answer is you've got to get in there. And if you haven't got it, it's going to hurt you in the long term.
Yeah, and I suppose it's a worry because it's how the business is supposed to steamroll ahead, right? And move well to the next level. I mean, 5G is aimed at perhaps pushing forward when it comes to things like electric vehicles and what that means for the future. And it could power a whole lot of those as well. Perhaps property stocks as well, very quickly. Those took a bit of a hard beat last year. Do they pick themselves up again this year, or, you know, because of course you have lower interest rates and the like, or is there still going to be a case of we're not too sure about the stock price? Maybe house prices might be a different story.
Yeah, I was going to say you have to differentiate property shares as a collective versus retail property and commercial property. So again, the same conversation with the lockdown, with coming out of this pandemic, you know, do people go back to offices? There's an oversupply. I mean, us sitting in Sandton tonight, there's a 21 or 22% the last count empty commercial properties around this area. That's the big question. And then retail property, some places have seen a sort of spike in retail with lower interest rates, with more and more people working from home. They're calling the Zoom sort of suburbs, people who realize they don't have to drive into Sandton. They can stay out in the suburbs. So those prices have gone up. So two very different dichotomies, and it's interesting to see where they go. If my money was going to back something, I'd probably back the retail with low interest rates as opposed to commercial right now.
Yeah, so interesting. Okay. Look, certainly going to be an interesting market picture. I don't think anybody can really write it down and say that there's only one way, I suppose, that all will go. Do you have any thoughts on the local currency? Is it currently oversold, perhaps still sitting above 15 Rand? We even saw it hit below 15 at some stage, even early this year. But of course, a lot more strength coming through from the United States. And perhaps that could increase if they do get through that stimulus package.
Yeah, the currency, funny enough, has been, I guess, besides GameStop, it's been one of the most talked about things as well. It's been all over the place this week. And in fact, just today, I mean, it was out at 15.25 against the dollar. It briefly went under 15 today. I mean, that's a 20 cents sort of move intraday. So all about the currency. I think the rand is probably going to surprise a few people. With a lot of doom and gloomers, and us South Africans are typically always negative the rand. But quite frankly, with interest rates where they are around the rest of the world, and maybe we get our house in order, and maybe all of a sudden there's a couple of pictures doing the rounds of vaccines landing at OR Tambo and a bit of positive press, I think the rand might surprise a few people. So don't write our poor suffering currency off just yet.
Poor suffering currency. We're not alone, I suppose, right? There's so many other emerging markets that are certainly in a similar boat, if not worse, actually, at this point. Nick, thank you so much for the time. Really appreciate it. Nick Kunze is at Sanlam Private Wealth, getting to grips with this market picture then. We certainly have unpacked. He's helped us get into today's markets.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield is proudly brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking, sponsor of this year's virtual mining Indaba. When it comes to mining, Absa doesn't see borders. They see opportunities. That's Africanacity. Absa's a registered FSP.
The Money Show.
The Friday File.
The Friday File.
All right, we get into a whole lot when it comes to the Friday File as well then this evening. And this time around, we talk about a really good news story where South African brand, a local premium non-alcoholic spirit brand, that Abstinence, it's a Cape Spice, Cape Citrus, Cape Fynbos, all of these have now taken home a few medals at the inaugural International Low and No Alcohol Masters Competition of 2021. In a time when we're, of course, seeing the alcohol sales ban in the country, the third of its kind, it does mean that a lot of jobs, a lot of money certainly being lost. But it's good to see, though, that a local brand is still trying to find ways and making headway in the industry. Keith Stevens is the CEO at Abstinence, who joins us now. Keith, thank you so much for the time. I mean, it's, again, congratulations. And this must really feel good to be able to say we joined a market that we thought we could win in, and now we're reaping the fruits.
Yeah, no, thank you, Abile. Thanks for the congratulations. Now, we're absolutely chuffed a bit. It's really nice to be part of the Abstinence team, and it's nice that we're getting recognition, not just here in our home market of South Africa, but also internationally. And yeah, you mentioned the awards we won recently, sponsored by the Spirits Business in the UK, which is an internationally renowned spirit company. And yeah, we were entered four products, the three white spirits you mentioned, the Cape Spice, the Cape Fynbos, and the Cape Citrus, and also our blood orange aperitif. And we walked away with three golds and one silver. So, you know, it's a really nice, fitting way, I think, of capping off 2020.
Yeah. Yeah. What does this actually mean then for the brand? I mean, you get all these awards and it makes you feel great, of course, and it shows the hard work that has gone into it. But what does this do for recognition as a global brand, or as a brand to perhaps grow globally? And what does it do for sales then? Does it continue to pick them up? Does it help in any way?
It helps a lot. I mean, I think, first of all, it helps us internally. We worked really hard over a long period of time to craft and create some really fantastic tasting liquid. So it's really nice when you get external endorsement of that. So we know on a global basis, we've got award-winning liquids. We've got great tasting, great aromatic products. So that's for us, it gives us, it's nice feedback and it gives us confidence. And that confidence then I think plays out in a more ambitious global agenda, because we know we've got a lot going for us now. We've got a winning brand, we've got a winning liquid, we've got a great team in South Africa, we've got a fantastic distributor, a national spirits distributor called Truman and Orange. And to answer your question, Abby, what it does for sales, so we've actually, since the awards in South Africa, we've actually grown about 300%. So it has a direct impact, I think, on building people's awareness and piquing their interest so they can go and try and buy Abstinence. So
yeah, sure.
The two are definitely related. And it's also interesting, actually, since we won the awards in the UK, we started to get more and more emails and phone calls from UK distributors and very prestigious outlets. There's a big sort of department store chain there called Harvey Nichols. It's a bit like a Harrods, and they want to stock us. So it's sure. been just really nice. You know, it's been a catalyst, I suppose, to take us to the next level.
Yeah, certainly massive, massive good news on that front. Let's talk about, Keith, whether the pandemic has affected your business at all. And I mean, you know, one would think that because you're a non-alcoholic brand, it's the time where you probably thrive the most. Has that really been the case? Or, you know, have there, of course, been bottlenecks and issues that you've had to face because of the pandemic?
Yeah, there's been it's been a sort of catalogue of roadblocks where I think we've had to be really agile and reassess. So, you know, if you think about Abstinence as a premium, adult, sophisticated brand, one would normally start to build that in what we call on-con. So, you know, hotels, bars, restaurants. Of course, that all effectively being closed down for most of the lockdown. So we had to sort of pivot. And where we pivoted, we've been stronger in retail, which is growing well, so Pick and Pays and Checkers and Spars. And we've been into e-commerce. So we're in a couple of e-commerce retailers, most notably Take a Lot. So, yes, it's been challenged because all of that on consumption has gone. But actually, there's a lot of consumption that was out of home has now shifted in home, and we're accessing that either via retailers or via e-commerce retailers.
Yeah, sure. A really, really enterprising story, I think, across the board here. So where to? What's the hope here? I mean, you've spoken about the brands that you certainly are going to now partner up with, ones that want to stock you as well. Where exactly would you like to grow the brand to? Where would you like to go to from here? And which markets are you looking to enter?
Yeah, sure. That's a really, really great question. So the first thing we want to do is, you know, we're South African, we're proudly South African, and we want to build an international business, but talking about our South African heritage. And all of our botanicals are sourced from the Cape Floral Kingdom. So that's part of an important part of our brand story. So we want to take that, and we want to go internationally. So at the moment, we're actually already in some guise or other. We're in six six international markets, sorry, five. We're in Germany, we're in Switzerland, we're in Belgium, we're online in Singapore, we're in Namibia. We'll be going to the UK over the next 4 or 8 weeks. We are going to the US on the West Coast, and we hope to get some positive news from a couple of retailers in Australia over the next month or two. So lots of sort of ambition, always obviously a challenge. We're a small business. We're always having to trade off different growth opportunities because we're kind of self-funded at the moment.
Is that your biggest fear, maybe? Entering those different markets being so difficult because you kind of are self-funded and all the things that you sort of have to go through in doing all of that. Is that a big fear for you then going into these different markets? Because you also kind of don't necessarily know how it'll go.
Yeah. No, we don't know how it'll go. And some markets are very competitive and reasonably well-established, say like the UK, where there's probably more than 100 non-alcoholic spirit brands. Others in the US are less developed and arguably an easier opportunity. So no, not fearful at all, just very excited. But what it means we need to do as a little abstinence team is just to be clear-sighted and do one thing at a time and do it really well. You know, do it then after that starts to actually make a little bit of money, then we'll go to the next market. So although we have big ambition, we actually don't want to fall over by trying to do too many things too quickly. So we've got quite a clear strategic priority of where the markets are, and we'll like do the UK, and then we'll do something in the US in one state. So we'll actually end up sort of regionalizing the US because it's just too big to think about as one kind of opportunity. So I think it's sort of clear strategy, you know, go to one market, hit all of the milestones, then go to the other market.
Sure. Very interesting. Look, you've certainly done well in not just this market, but certainly a few that you've certainly entered thus far already. All the best with it. Keith Stevens, the CEO at Abstinence, joining us there as we talk about how the Low to No Alcohol Masters competition of 2021 saw Abstinence take home quite a few awards, making it in a time when clearly the alcohol industry has certainly been getting a few question marks as well. All right, then, after this, we're going to get into the brutal biz quiz, as we always do on a Friday. Going to ask you the question, though, now, and hopefully we can get your calls in, of course. 021-446-0567 if you're in Cape Town. 011-883-0702 out in Joburg. The Body Shop, Musica, and Claire's. Who are they all controlled by? Which JSE-listed company controls The Body Shop, Musica, and Claire's? That's your first question on the Brutal Biz Quiz. Let's get your answers after this.
702. Let's walk the talk.
Streaming countrywide on the 702 app.
All right, then, the Brutal Biz Quiz then on Friday, as we usually do, and we get to the questions then that are part of the Brutal Biz Quiz. The first question is, The Body Shop, Musica, as well as Claire's, are controlled by which JSE-listed company? Let's chat now to, who is that, who we can talk to? Let's talk to Joseph then from Krugersdorp. Your answer here, Joseph?
RWD.
Yep, 100% correct. In a couple of months' time, Clicks will be without music in its portfolio, though. It plans to close all of its 59 stores, closing their doors by the end of May. All right, your next question then, Joseph. Who was the first black woman in South Africa to lead a South African bank? She actually, on Monday, announced her resignation from the bank, unfortunately. And of course, unfortunately, it was heard then that there was an issue between herself and the chairman of the company. Who is the lady that I'm speaking of?
Arabile, her name is just gone, eh?
Oh, no, Joseph. No, don't do this.
I kid you not. And I was actually listening to the show at the time.
Okay.
The last week came out.
All right. Sorry, Joseph. Let's get on to our next one then. Joe, perhaps then, from the south of Joburg. Who was the first black woman in South Africa to lead a South African bank? Joe? No? Ooh, unfortunately not. All right. Kumo from Bryanston. Let's get to you then. Who was the first black woman in South Africa to lead a South African bank?
Basasani Maluleke.
100% correct. She was the first woman to lead a South African bank with a sudden, of course, resignation, as I noted earlier this week. All right, Kumo, let's get into your next question. We want to make you the Brutal Biz Quiz champion then tonight. India has banned which social media company on national security grounds? So there are quite a few of these, but this one in particular has short videos that it particularly makes famous.
I think I'm going to go with TikTok.
Oh, look at that. Those guesses are 100% right, right? They announced that it'll lay off hundreds of workers in India 7 months after the Chinese-owned video app was banned from what was once its biggest international market on national security grounds. All right, here's an interesting one. Hopefully you keep abreast of the markets, Kumo, because the next question is still about technology, but also U.S. retail investors used which app to buy GameStop stock and squeeze short sellers. So U.S. retail investors used which app in order to buy GameStop shares and squeeze short sellers? Do you know the app that we're mentioning? Think of Friar Tuck. Steal from the rich and give to the poor.
Oh, Robinhood.
Oh, there we go. See, look at that. Giving you the hints there, but nonetheless, today a Robinhood customer, of course, filing a class action, a lawsuit against the stock trading app after the company barred traders from buying shares of GameStop. All right, here's the next one then. Minister of Finance Tito Mboweni fired the entire executive board of which financial regulatory body? This happened late yesterday. And it's one of those industries that are certainly struggling at present. Leadership has certainly faltered. The likes of Steinhoff, the likes of Tongaat Hewlett have suffered at the hands of these. Way back when, there was a company even called Arthur Andersen in the United States that closed down. Which financial body, regulatory body in South Africa was the board was entirely fired by the finance minister, Tito Mboweni, yesterday?
I have no clue.
Oh, no. Kumo, we're doing so well. It's the Independent Regulatory Board for Auditors. So, IRBA, that entire board has actually been fired. A very interesting story on that front, really, because while the board was fired, the CEO still remains, unless, of course, the board itself had actually fired the CEO, which is, she's actually the problem area, if I can call it that. Janita John is the one that everyone is sort of looking towards to say what exactly is going to happen there. All right, let's get into our next question, though, and perhaps we can ask Len this one. Len in Hyde Park, my question to you is, which South African billionaire's power company has become the largest individual shareholder in the Solar Group? Len in Hyde Park. No, unfortunately not. All right, let's move on to David in Midrand. David in Midrand, which South African billionaire's power company has become the largest individual shareholder in the Solar Group? Here's a hint, David.
No, I have no idea.
No? Oh, this is unfortunate. All right, we'll try and move on to somebody else then with this one. I mean, very interestingly enough, there are a few hints that I can give. He does own a company called African Rainbow Capital, African Rainbow Minerals, African Rainbow Energy and Power is the energy group we're talking about. So which South African billionaire then, their power company becoming the largest individual shareholder of a group called the Solar Group? Solar spelled S-O-L-A. And of course, they started getting in a 40% stake of that Solar Group. Then where are they going then with this? Even perhaps questions around whether they'll... Who knows? Start owning things like the sun, trying to, of course, add everything yellow into their portfolio. Let's chat to Justin, hopefully, then, from Bedford View. Justin, your answer to this one, which South African billionaire's power company becoming the largest individual shareholder in the Solar Group?
It's Patrice Motsepe.
There we go. Of course, yes. Also the owner of Mamelodi Sundowns. So all the yellow sort of coming into all of this. All right. Now, Justin, this is perhaps the harder one, But it is the last question. If you take this, you become the brutal BizQuiz champion for this Friday. So, still on mergers and acquisitions, which local company, Justin, made a huge acquisition move on Adapted? I'll repeat. Which local company made a huge acquisition move on Adapted? The answer is in the question. Justin?
Unfortunately, I don't have the answer.
Oh. Thank you. Oh, and I just given the answer there. All right, let's go to Tumi very quickly as well. Then Tumi, perhaps we can ask you, which local company made a huge acquisition move on Adapted?
I think I don't have it too on the
top. Oh, unfortunate. All right. Sorry about that one. Well, it is actually the Huge Group. As I said, the answer is in the question. The Huge Group making a request to buy Adapted. I think it's for around 800 million rand as well this week. So very interesting there. That is the Money Show then for this Friday. Thank you so much for joining us. Bruce is, of course, back next week. But we'll continue with our best bits right after this.